Good morning from the Financial Times. Today is Monday, April 1st, and this is your FT News Briefing. There's a new bright spot for China's economy, and disinformation is a huge concern going into this year's European elections. Plus, investors are getting antsy about Brazil's president.
So there have been a couple of high-profile cases where Lula's government is accused of political interference in some of Brazil's biggest and most important companies.
I'm Kasia Brusalian, and here's the news you need to start your day. There's some good news for China's economy. The country is seeing an uptick in activity from its factories. This is the first time that manufacturing has increased in China in half a year. Industrial profits also recently hit a 25-month high. A lot of that is thanks to a boost in export orders. That's being led by things like rubber and plastic products, cars, and computer equipment. However, China's National Bureau of Statistics warns that there is still, quote, insufficient market demand. They say the government will need to offer more state support to manufacturers in order to keep up momentum. In just a few months, millions of people across Europe will hit the ballot box. The European Union is holding parliamentary elections in early June, and the results will shape the political direction of the bloc. Campaigns are now in full swing, but alongside the traditional stump speeches and glossy TV ads, there's also a flood of disinformation, and it's coming from Russia. Here to talk to me about it is the FT's Leila Aboud. Hey, Leila.
Hello.
So disinformation, it's not really that new anymore, but when it comes to Europe and to these upcoming elections, what are we really worried about?
Yeah, I mean, you're right to say that Russia has been doing a lot of disinformation and hacking for, you know, decades. But I think what's happening now is the regulators and the national governments in Europe are kind of more aware than in the past. And some of the leaders sort of tasked with looking into this have warned that there could be a, quote, avalanche of disinformation coming from Russia that's specifically designed to sort of influence the vote or just kind of throw so much confusing and contradictory information into the conversation that voters might be influenced in one way or another.
So it sounds like Russia's really doubling down on its tactics for these elections. What's the end goal here?
I mean, creating messes and also, I'm being a bit ironic, but yeah, it's just sort of like fomenting discord in European countries and also trying to create the impression that the unity of Europe behind Ukraine is faltering. Don't forget the backdrop that we're dealing with here in Europe, which is that the war in Ukraine is sort of in its third year. So, you know, any sort of thing they can boost online that suggests that the European public, let's say a French voter, a German voter, doesn't want their government to send money to Ukraine anymore. It's a really good operation on their part.
Hmm. So these messes that you mentioned, it sounds like they could not only be pretty costly for Ukraine, but also for the EU. So I'm assuming that officials there are on pretty high alert for it. What are some of the examples that you've seen already?
There was a viral video clip that created a buzz online briefly.
Le président français Emmanuel Macron a été contraint d'annuler sa visite en Ukraine à la suite d'une provocation meurtrière à son
encontre. And it appeared to show a well-known TV presenter on this French TV channel announcing this sort of alarming news that the French president Emmanuel Macron had canceled a planned trip to Kiev because of an assassination plot.
Selon une source proche du Conseil national du renseignement, cette tentative a été stoppée par les services secrets français.
And this thing sort of lived online briefly for a couple of hours and then got incredibly viral because the former Russian president Dmitry Medvedev tweeted it. This is kind of new technology which didn't really exist even like 5 years ago. And it's part of the reason why the regulators in some of these different countries are trying to kind of raise awareness about these things now.
Yeah, and how are they doing that?
So in France, they've done something quite interesting. And they created this thing called Viginum, which is a team of about 50 engineers and sort of social media experts. And they essentially have this kind of surveillance operation online. They monitor social networks, but also private chat apps like Telegram and WhatsApp. And they just kind of look for signals or operations of what they think is disinformation. They've now started kind of making their findings public. It's kind of a soft power way of not just kind of hoarding the information for themselves, but spreading it. The EU Commission is doing something slightly different, where they're working on it from the angle of trying to make sure that the tech companies play their role in kind of doing the monitoring online. So if something obviously fake, like the Macron video comes out, that, you know, the social networks have a responsibility to take it down quickly. And if they don't, they could face fines from the EU Commission.
So it seems like France and the bloc more broadly are each doing things to counter this problem of disinformation. But what makes stamping it out so difficult in the first place? I mean, is it kind of just like a game of whack-a-mole here?
I mean, you know, it's a little bit like the spy wars, right? Like whenever one side does something, the other side will adjust. And it's just like during the Cold War. And one thing that's different nowadays are these hybrid operations that have started to appear in Europe. There was a really wild one in France just after the October 7th Hamas attack on Israel, in which these Stars of David appeared painted on the walls of Paris apartment buildings, which kind of harkens back to World War II and France's persecution of the Jews, and it sort of triggers all this panic. They managed to kind of track it up the chain, and it turns out it was this Russian intelligence operation where they sent two Moldovan individuals to Paris, had them paint all these stars, and then they boosted the whole thing online. So it's kind of the reason why I said it was a hybrid operation is because something is appearing in the real world. It actually happened. We all saw it. And then, you know, you learn that it's actually an operation by some Moscow spy who figured it was a good way to mess with the French. It was a very strange moment.
Yeah, that's really crazy. And what's the bigger picture here? I mean, what's at stake if countries like France and, you know, all the others in the EU aren't really able to make some sort of dent in combating disinformation, you know, especially ahead of these elections?
We have to hope that voters going into a voting booth are going to be able to sort of make their own independent decisions and not be influenced by whatever they saw on Twitter that morning or TikTok in the evening. That's my hope. The more negative view would just be that disinformation essentially makes it really difficult for democracies to function. If we can't agree on one set of facts or even sort of what's happening in front of our eyes, then, you know, it makes it quite difficult.
Leila Aboud is the FT's Paris bureau chief. Thanks, Leila.
Thank you.
History might be repeating itself for Brazil's president. Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, or just Lula for short, is under fire for getting involved in some of the country's biggest companies. It's a throwback to when Lula was in power in the early 2000s. That's when he laid the groundwork for a heavy-handed approach to running the economy. And it ended up being pretty costly. Here to talk about it is the FT's Michael Pooler. Hey, Michael.
Hi there.
All right, so give me the rundown here. What sort of red flags has Lula raised recently?
So there have been a couple of high-profile cases where Lula's government is accused of political interference in some of Brazil's biggest and most important companies. The first one was Vale, the multinational mining group, which is one of the world's largest suppliers of iron ore. And sources have told us that the government was pressing for an ally of Lula to be installed as the company's next CEO. However, the Brazilian state is not a direct shareholder in Vale, and it has no legal rights to make this approach and have an influence on the process. The second case involved the state-controlled oil major Petrobras, which is one of the world's biggest petroleum producers. And in that case, the company decided not to pay extraordinary dividends. This came as a surprise to the market, and Petrobras shares fell by 10% in a single day. And it would later transpire that the order actually came from Lula and his ministers.
Wow. And now clearly, things like trying to influence who gets these big promotions in major companies, you know, if it's true, that does raise some concerns. But tell me a little bit about the backstory here. Why are these moves so controversial for Lula and his party in particular?
So the reason that it stirred alarm among investors is because of the history of Lula's party in government. The Workers' Party was in power in Brazil between 2003 and 2016. During Lula's terms, he started an approach that was more statist to the economy. His administrations began to play more of an active role, giving out loans from public banks and also intervening in the way that certain businesses were run. Now, this approach really got turbocharged under his chosen successor, Dilma Rousseff, who was also from the Workers' Party. She was criticized for messing around with some of the biggest companies in the country. Then Brazil was hit by a commodities downturn, and critics said that the combination of excessive public spending and intervention in the economy were the reasons that dragged the country into its worst recession on record.
So, sounds like things didn't really end all that well the last time the Workers' Party was in power. But how's the economy doing this time around, now that Lula is back and has been in office for just a little over a year?
So, during the first year of Lula's third presidency, GDP growth was much higher than economists had initially forecast. It came in at just below 3% last year. This year, growth is expected to slow down, but some forecasts have been getting revised upwards. So the economy is doing all right. However, Lula has made some comments recently that were viewed as antagonistic by the business sector. For example, not so long ago, he said, Brazilian companies need to agree with the Brazilian government's development thinking. That's what we want. And he also said that Vale, which, remember, is a private sector mining company, he said it belongs to Brazil. So the rhetoric, the tone of some of these comments has alarmed investors who had hoped for a more business-friendly and pro-market approach from Lula.
But the economy is doing all right. So I'm wondering to what extent we should see Lula's recent moves and this rhetoric that you mentioned as a return to old practices, or, you know, could this be a new chapter for Brazil?
I think it will become a lot more clearer throughout this year. One of the big differences politically this time around is that the Workers' Party is much, much weaker. Lula doesn't have a majority in Congress. The parliament is much more conservative. And if Lula does try any radical moves, then without doubt, there'll be a lot of pushback from the lawmakers. So I think Lula has less room to maneuver this time around. He clearly does have more of a statist view of the economy, but the extent to which he'll be able to put some of these plans into action, I think we'll see in the coming months. And some of it will depend on things like his popularity and how well the economy is doing.
Michael Pooler is the FT's Brazil correspondent. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you.
You can read more on all of these stories at ft.com for free when you click the link in our show notes. This has been your daily FT News Briefing. Make sure to check back tomorrow for the latest business news.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America NA, copyright 2024.